Hey guys, Mike here for Hokie Hangover on behalf of the good folks over at Main Street Pharmacy. Former Downtown Blacksburg Business of the Year in 2019, Jeremy Counts and his staff at Main Street Pharmacy have you covered for all of your pharmaceutical needs. Medication, school supplies, you name it, Jeremy and his staff, family-owned business, they got you covered over at Main Street Pharmacy in Downtown Blacksburg. They've been a sponsor of our podcast since the beginning, going on 5 years now, and there's a reason why. They're extremely reliable. They're good people. They're friends of ours, friends of the podcast. Head on over to Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street, downtown Blacksburg. Open Monday to Friday, 9 to 6, Saturday from 9 to noon. They're closed on Sundays. You can be reached at 540-605-7721. That's Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street in downtown Blacksburg.
Hokie Hangover is proud to be sponsored by Homefield, the premium collegiate apparel brand in the United States. Based in Indianapolis, Homefield is committed to creating comfortable and officially licensed apparel featuring vintage college designs. Homefield puts in extra reps for each of the more than 150 colleges they highlight, discovering unique logos, mascots, and iconic moments to create the best look at your tailgate. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order. Homefield makes online shopping so easy, even I can't screw it up. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order and acquire blue chip apparel from Homefield, an official sponsor of Hokie Hangover.
Hey guys, Mike here on behalf of our podcast partner, Vivid Seats. That's right, Hokie Hangover Podcast is partnering with Vivid Seats this football season to provide you with all of your ticketing needs. Heading to a game at Lane Stadium this fall, need tickets? Check out Vivid Seats. Going to another college football venue this fall? Use Vivid Seats. Checking out a concert venue even? Vivid Seats has you covered there as well. And they got a promo code just for you. That's right. Go to vividseats.com, use the promo code BEAMERBALL20 at checkout for $20 off your first order of $200 or more. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL20 at checkout for $20 off your first order of $200 or more. We can't thank Vivid Seats enough for their partnership this football season. Make sure to check them out. Hokie Hangover, we're back. Spring game recap. Before we get into it, we're presented by Main Street Pharmacy, Vivid Seats, Homefield Apparel. Support our sponsors. All three of them have been sponsoring the podcast for some time now. All of the links that you need to access the apparel, to access the tickets, the Main Street Pharmacy website, everything you possibly need can be found in the show notes, if you're watching on YouTube, or of course on audio as well, where they always are in the description. Guys, how's it going? Ricky, I know you were at spring game. Did you enjoy it? Good weekend in Blacksburg?
Yeah, aside from, you know, the gale force winds that we all experienced on Saturday, it felt like we were living in a hurricane, except for the rain, which was nice. But I had a great time, great tailgate to start, good turnout from the fan base. Shout out to Clark, Ruland, Izzy Post for getting us to a good tailgate. Got to see Clark's amazing collection of Virginia Tech memorabilia, which is, boys, that is the most impressive thing I've ever seen.
If there was one person who would be able to house that amount of memorabilia, it would be Clark. Our guy Clark. Andrew, what's going on, man? You were like me. You watched spring game on your television.
I did. I did. I snuck it in there between the Masters coverage. Ended up doing a little bit of a rewatch there with my full attention span. But bummed I wasn't able to be there. But, you know, I've made my investment. I got my full season tickets for 2024. So plenty of Blacksburg in my future. So if you were there and, you know, you're a friend of mine, you were looking for me, don't worry, you'll get me next time around.
You've been traveling quite a bit, so you needed a break. You were due.
Dude, so much traveling. I am so done.
Yeah.
After yeah. this trip to Miami this weekend.
There you go. Fair. Well, yeah, gotta sneak that one in. Go out with a bang. Great. Andrew in Miami. That'll be a good time for all involved. If you're watching us on YouTube for the first time, even if you're just like a longtime listener on audio, one thing you can do to really help us is go on our YouTube page and subscribe. That's a real big deal. We're trying to launch this thing and get this rolling in advance of the new season this fall. First of all, I want to thank everybody who has subscribed already, who watched the Brent Pry podcast that we did with him about a week and a half ago, who listened to the Brent Pry podcast on audio. It was obviously very well received in terms of people who listened to it. Really appreciate the support.
I had multiple people actually talk to me about that at the tailgate. They were impressed.
We love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was impressed by you before you started interviewing head coaches, Ricky. Just saying.
Yeah. I mean, we got in on the ground floor, Rick. I mean, let the record show.
Sheer physicality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrew and I got in on the ground floor. No doubt about it. All right. Spring game. Like, let's start with this off the top. And Ricky, you wrote about this on Settling the Score. Really good story you wrote today that published. You can only take so much from spring game. I think that's number one, right? Number two, it's one of a series of scrimmages, which you pointed out in your story, which I think is really important. The spring game itself is for fans and for recruiting. It is a data point in a series of data points for the coaching staff, many of which came behind the scenes, right? You know, fans love spring game because it's really the one, a lot of times, the only opportunity in the spring where you get to kind of see any sort of football and see how the team's progressing in preparation of the upcoming season. But for the coaching staff, yes, it is great to see, you know, how the players perform in front of some fans in the stadium with a little bit more pressure than you would see like in a regular practice. But it is one data point in a series of data points. It's hard to take a ton from it. But guys, what were your kind of implications from the spring game? What stood out to you, good or bad? Let's just like talk big picture here first as far as the operation. Ricky, I guess we'll start with you because you were in the stadium and you were able to kind of have that perspective that Andrew and I couldn't have.
I think the most important takeaway, and I know Clark backed me up on this, we can never mic up the band again. That was an awful experience for the folks in the stadium. So if you're in the stadium and you're listening to this, please tell me if you think I'm way off base, but I think everyone can agree that that did not sound particularly well. In terms of the actual, you know, stuff that matters, the stuff that happened on the field, I was a little disappointed with the way the offense looked in the passing game. I don't know if you guys paid too much attention to the actual kind of concepts that they were putting out there, but they had tons of success on their check down throws, getting the ball to their backs in the flat. All of those short throws seemed like they netted them a ton of success. And a lot of that came from playmakers doing what they do best, right? Which is making guys miss, making plays in space, getting the yards after catch. Anytime Virginia Tech tried to push the ball downfield, particularly in the first half, it was a huge problem. They could not have anyone open. If they did have people running downfield, the throws weren't particularly accurate. And I don't know if that's something that has been a trend in spring practice. And that kind of goes back to the original point, Mike, which I'm glad you mentioned off the top. But I did find that a little concerning, considering this is a receiving core that brings back a ton of talent. Stephen Gosnell did not play in the spring game. He was in a jersey, but not padded up. But Daquan Felton, Jalen Lane, Ollie Jennings all played in this game, and none of them were really able to make a difference downfield. So, you know, the opposite end of that, right, is you have to give credit to the Virginia Tech defensive backs for kind of keeping a lid on things, making sure that they didn't have any busts in coverage. But the numbers in terms of the passing stats for Kyron Drones and Pop Watson were a little deceiving. And I'm going to be watching out for that now early on in the year next year
to see if Virginia Tech is able to push the ball downfield, because we saw this past season when they were able to get Daquan Felton open on those throws downfield, it really changed the entire narrative of the game, because it set up so many of those running plays that was kind of Virginia Tech's bread and butter last year.
I mean, Ricky, I'm not necessarily as concerned, you know, with the lack of spring game production from your top end receivers, because
why not? You should be. I was doing the you have to feel worse. Yeah.
You have to feel worse. Now, those guys didn't just get like
a shtick that'll never die on this podcast.
It will never die.
I mean, maybe you can be a little bit concerned about Jennings, because there would be like, what if he's not fully back from the injury and never gets back to where he is? I don't think spring game would be a fair assessment to really make any judgment one way or the other. He could have gone off and, you know, there'd still be a question mark there, if you will. But I don't think Jennings, Felton, and Lane's lack of production was concerning. They're proven commodities for Virginia Tech. I think that if you look at guys like Chance Fitzgerald, you know, Keelan Adams, Chance Wiggins, Turner Bradshaw, who we saw some of last year, Take Heath, who's a name that certainly got a lot of buzz within the program. Like, you have the talent at the top, and even though you know, and you know, it's the 2024 spring game, I'm not going to sit here in the recap and blabber on about 2025, but you know, the cupboard might not be bare when those guys leave. You see the potential behind them. So, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, for me, that's not an incredible concern. Now, offensive line on paper, you know, it leaves a lot to be desired, but at the same time, you're mixing, you're matching, you have groupings between the orange squad and the maroon squad that wouldn't normally be playing next to each other. And, you know, with some of the combinations, hopefully won't be playing next to each other, because that would mean, you know, some serious injury issues up front. But, you know, all in all, you know, I still leave watching the spring game with the exact same sentiment I had beforehand. Virginia Tech is pretty well positioned for 2024.
Yeah, we've kind of stuck to talking about the offense here mostly, so I'll just kind of give my view on what we saw offensively. Look, like Virginia Tech, like technically the defense had 13 sacks or whatever it was.
Like, quote unquote sacks.
Right, like Brent Pry is blowing the whistle very quickly for good reason, right? When yeah. Kyren Drones was in especially, and I get that, like Virginia Tech obviously cannot afford an injury to Kyren Drones or any hopes they have of, you know, the season they want to have, I think kind of go out the window or by the wayside, regardless of what you think of Pop Watson's future. You lose your starting quarterback, you're in a tough way. The offensive line. So a lot of people are concerned about right tackle, because Parker Clements has struggled, has been mediocre at times. He's had some games where he's held his own, and then he's had some games where he's really struggled. I think, you know, he's been around the program for so long, he's an easy guy for Virginia Tech fans when they're looking at the offensive line to be like, all right, you know, can we get this guy out of here? My thought on this is that in the spring game, you know, it's not necessarily a spot where the offensive line can like showcase everything they can do like we'd see in the fall. And here's what I mean by that. A lot of what Tyler Bowen did last year in the back two thirds of the season, when Virginia Tech's offense, I thought, was playing its best football, he was rolling the pocket a lot, right? I think a big reason why the Virginia Tech offensive line improved as the season went on last year is because the scheme made it a lot easier on him, right? Both in with the run and especially in pass protection, because, you know, you're rolling Kyren Drones out. You don't need to hold your blocks as long. It's easier to block when you're on the run. Like, there's so many different elements to offensive line play. It's very tough to stand stationary and have a defensive end or a linebacker coming off the edge and running right at you, and you're standing there stationary trying to protect a quarterback who's sitting back there in the pocket. It's why, you know, Christian Darrisaw was valued so much during his time at Virginia Tech, and why he entered as a day one starter in the NFL, is because he did that really, really well. I think Virginia Tech's offensive line will need to certainly play better than it did in Saturday's spring game. I'm not overly concerned about it because I think the scheme come the fall, when obviously the quarterbacks would be live in game action, I think we're going to see more of the pocket rolling. Drones isn't going to stand back there stationary because that doesn't best suit his skill set. I do think that, you know, there are steps that Virginia Tech's offensive line can take to improve. I think Ron Crook's done a pretty good job developing this offensive line. I thought he did a pretty good job getting the most out of them last year. But I think the scheme is going to help them. So I'm not overly concerned. It's not like a five alarm fire situation, in my opinion, with the offensive line. I understand why some fans would be concerned about it. I think it's justifiable for them to be a little bit concerned with how it looked at times. But Andrew mentioned it, you know, it's you're mixing and matching a little bit. And I don't think the spring game, in terms of like the quarterback's not live, you're not going to be rolling the pocket, he's not going to be out on the run. Like all those things that you're going to see in game action this fall doesn't really take place in the spring game. So that's one takeaway I had that I saw kind of on social media. You know, a lot of fans were real concerned about that. It's got my eyebrow raised a little bit, right? Because it was kind of a sore spot, especially when Virginia Tech's offense was struggling early in the year last year. So I'm not going to say it doesn't have any credence because that wouldn't be fair, but like I am not as concerned, I guess, about the offensive line as some people seem to be on social media. But I'm curious what you guys' takes on that are.
Oh, I mean, for me, it kind of goes back to what my point was. I felt like a lot of the quote-unquote sacks that we saw on Saturday were coverage sacks. And it was because Kyron had, you know, 3 or 4 seconds but could not find anyone downfield to throw the ball to. And, you know, asking your offensive line to block for more than 4 seconds is just completely unreasonable. I think a lot of that stuff gets cleaned up when maybe the scheme isn't as, you know, base and vanilla as a lot of the stuff you're running in the spring is. The mobility of the quarterbacks is an obvious thing that you're completely missing in this kind of scenario. I think it was 13 sacks, quote unquote, that the defense totaled between the maroon and orange teams on Saturday. That's just because the quarterbacks aren't getting a chance to show their moves and to be able to make plays with their feet. So I think a lot of those concerns are going to get kind of forgotten once we get into the regular season. I still don't believe that this offensive line is an asset. I'm not sure it's quite a liability right now, but it's not something that I would. It's not a unit I'm going to look at and say that's the reason why Virginia Tech is going to win 8 or 9 games this year.
That was good. That was a good summation, Andrew.
So I mean, but I'm on the other side of that, right? Like, there are a lot of units that you can look at and say, here is the reason why Virginia Tech has a lot of potential. You know, you can look at the defensive backs. You can look at the wide receiving core, as deep as it's been in a decade plus in Blacksburg. Along the defensive line, of course, quarterback position. You got Bashaun Tutin coming back in the backfield. Like, what could hold Virginia Tech back? The play of the offensive line. So while I'm not here about to yell, like you mentioned, Mike, 5 alarm fire, oh my gosh, Tech is doomed. In the modern day era of college football, when improvements can be made at various points during the season, remember, on this day a year ago, Antoine Powell Ryland wasn't on the roster, probably still a Florida Gator or just about to jump in the portal. And without him, last year's probably a little bit of a different story. So if I'm the coaching staff, I'm still aggressively looking at places to upgrade up front or for someone whom could help and just make it a little bit less of a question mark, right? Because, you know, things are well positioned. Things are lined up pretty well for 2024 to have any area that might even limit the potential of that group, to me, is something that you need to at least aggressively try to address as best you can. And, you know, obviously you guys know, I follow the recruiting and all that stuff with 247, get a little bit of the inside scoop there. Pretty confident that, you know, that's a direction in which they're looking.
Yeah, I don't think that's surprising. I mean, Tech's needed. Yeah, I mean, they've needed offensive line help for a while. So I would assume that Pry's going to find a spot on this roster if there's someone in the portal that fits what he's looking for. I would assume that that's a no-brainer for him and the coaching staff.
I mean, offensive line and linebacker are the two spots that in 2 years in the prior era you have yet to see, you know, exponential growth from day one to day 700 some odd, right?
Yeah.
Like, the offensive line was probably in better shape in the last day of Fuente than it was, you know, midway through last year, even at the end of last year, right? And the play of that group did improve. And I don't want to gloss over that because they did get better as the year went on. But, you know, it's a team with high expectations. It's a team that, you know, for the first time in a few years is going to be preseason top 25. And, of course, Brett Pry will be the first person to tell you. He literally told us that doesn't mean anything. Of course, it doesn't. Plenty of preseason top 25 teams end up busting out every year. But generally speaking, teams who bring back a lot of top-end talent from a little bit of a run the previous year got something going, and they're a team to watch. So, again, if you're Virginia Tech, you have Drones with who knows what his future looks like at 2024. You have the wide receiver group. You have two in a bunch of really good defensive backs who all might not be on the roster in 2025. I'm not saying, like, go for broke, but you do whatever you need to do to make this a championship caliber team while you have, you know, it's easier to get the one missing piece than the other nine. And maybe Tech has the other nine. So let's do it.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get back into the specifics of the spring game in a second, but I think we're on a good path here with this topic. So I want to expand upon it a little bit. This feels like, and I want, you know, listeners and viewers on YouTube, I want you all to kind of understand where I'm at with this next statement I'm about to make. This is a one-year window in terms of, like, maximizing the core of this current roster. I'm not saying it's a one-year window in terms of Brent Pry and what he can accomplish at Virginia Tech. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, with this core, with, like, the playmakers you have on offense and defense, a majority of them are upperclassmen, or a majority of them, if not upperclassmen, are draft eligible after this season. And you're in an era now, especially with transfer portal and NIL, where you're kind of always acting on a one-year window. But I think especially in this scenario, if there is any weakness on this roster that you feel like a transfer can come in, and even if it's not, you know, we're not asking him to play like 90% of the snaps, but, you know, maybe he needs to come in and be in a rotation and come in and make a difference and play some snaps and help supplement from a depth standpoint, or you feel like, you know, there's a spot on your roster that it's like, okay, if one guy gets hurt, we're really, really screwed. You need to go out and address that right now, because I think Virginia Tech has a really, really strong group at key positions. Obviously, you have quarterback figured out. You have a really, really good running back in Bashaul Tootin, and we'll talk about the other running backs who played in the spring game, but it seems like Virginia Tech is developing some depth behind Tootin, right, which I think is really important. Andrew, you mentioned the receiving core. The deepest receiving core Virginia Tech's had returning in terms of, like, upperclassmen, returning production, guys who have kind of been there and done that, whether it be at Virginia Tech or different schools, proven commodities in the receiving room, like, we haven't even talked about Aiden Green yet tonight. Like, he pretty decent in the spring game, right? Like, yeah. looked good, and he is like the fourth or fifth receiver in the room. Like, Virginia Tech's got good depth at receiver. They do have, you know, say what you will about the offensive line, and I understand the concern. I think Virginia Tech does need to go and get somebody in the portal, right? I think that would be really smart to do. But you are returning a bunch of guys who started games together last year. I do think that's important. defensive line, linebacker, right? Like interior defensive line and linebacker in particular, those were two areas where, you know, I think Virginia Tech really, really struggled last year, you know, filling the run gaps. I think they went out and they have tried to address those areas, right? You obviously go get Aeneas Peebles, who was an all-conference defensive tackle at Duke. You get Kamari Copeland, who has had success at a different level of college football, but you bring him in and hope that he can play. Kelvin Gilliam, you bring him in. He was a former big-time recruit, was in the rotation at Oklahoma a little bit. Now he's on your roster where he's looking for more playing time and a chance to really produce. You have an all-conference player in Sam Brumfield, not in the ACC, of course, but he was at Middle Tennessee State. He's an all-conference performer coming in to fill. He's a true Mike linebacker that you didn't have a year ago. Virginia Tech has two corners that are number one corners. Virginia Tech's got two of them. I mean, it's arguably the best 1-2 tandem at corner in the entire ACC. Safety's a question. Can Jalen Stroman stay healthy? If he's healthy, can he stay on the field, right? Because he's had the targeting issues in the past. Mose Phillips, Jalen Jones, you know, do you need to go get another safety? Like, I think the two biggest question marks for me are safety and offensive line in terms of, like, this conversation and supplementing through the portal and finding a guy, like another guy who's had experience, who's played elsewhere, who's looking kind of for a fresh start. I think those are maybe the two areas you look for. But whole point being, like, if you're Brent Pry and you look at this roster and, yeah, could depth be better? Of course it could. But are you in a better spot than you were 24 months ago when you took this thing over? Hell yeah, man. You got starters who are good at every position group. You got starters that are good, at least one starter that's good. Like, if we're talking about safety, you have one safety that's good at least, right? You have at least, like, one defensive end that's good, one linebacker that's good. You have multiple receivers. He's built out the starting 11 on both sides of the football, and he's starting to develop depth behind these guys, and that's a sign of, obviously, a very healthy program. But this is a one-year window. If there's any perceived weakness, you need to go attack it to have the kind of season that you think you can have with this core. Because anything else, in my opinion, short of like injuries, if everybody's healthy and you just simply didn't address an area of need, it's a missed opportunity, especially if that leads to a couple tough losses late in the year, right? Okay, maybe, you know, you have a safety that doesn't perform the way that he needed to. Maybe you have the offensive line that struggles in a tough matchup against a good pass rush late in the year. Like, are you going to be sitting here kicking yourself that, okay, we missed out on an ACC championship game because, you know, we decided to not address offensive line in the transfer portal when we had all these big-time playmakers? You know, are we missing out on, you know, a 12-team playoff? Are we like the 13th team in the country? Had a pretty good year, but could have been a little bit better if we added a piece here or a piece there. Like, I don't think you want to be sitting here asking those what-if questions if you're Brent Pry and your staff. So I think it's really important to go out and, you know, if there's an area where you think you need to get some help, I think you got to go do it in this window.
Yeah, and by the way, just kind of a side thought, right? I know that going and especially at this stage in the off season and finding that talent and filling those gaps isn't necessarily an easy job, but in 2024, it's part of the job, right? Yeah. And part of your success is going to be dictated by your ability to maximize the roster 365 days a year. And that includes improving upon it when given the opportunity. You know, thinking back to, and this was the biggest thing for me about this spring game, right, is looking back at 2022 and 2023. We went to the spring game. We watched that spring game as fans and as people that, you know, are involved with the program and whatever, which way you are. Looking for answers to a lot of questions, right? Who's going to be wide receiver number two? Who's going to be the starting quarterback? Like, not so many questions to be answered this year. A lot of that stuff you figured out. Like, we're not going to be going into the preseason preview 5 months from now, or you know, four months from now, wow, time flies, saying Virginia Tech can do X and Y and have this level of success if, and then just run off an if statement like it's a 10-leg parlay, right? That's never going to hit. No, like we need a couple of these legs to hit. Go and increase your chances, because not only is it important for Virginia Tech's success in the short term, but for this coaching staff and for this program as a whole. You know, we've been waiting a long time to have a season where Virginia Tech could say, like, we're back. Here we are. We've been under the radar for a long time, and we're so immersed with it and so emotionally tied into it that, you know, it probably doesn't feel that way. We all remember the past, but for a lot of people, Virginia Tech is a team that, you know, had a nice little decade-long run, and now they're kind of back to being mediocre, but they have a great intro at the stadium. This is the best chance that Virginia Tech has had in a long, long time to make a national statement, and you need to do everything in your power to fill that hole. So I want to kind of transition it based on that, because one of the if statements that we went to spring game talking about was the backup quarterback position, right? You saw a little bit of Watson. You saw a little bit of Wickie. Obviously, Wickie, as of today, has transferred out of the program. Is that official, or am I breaking news that I shouldn't be breaking? Okay, cool.
You're outlet reporter, so I think we're good. Yeah.
I don't even read the outlet. I read the group chat where I figure it out like 2 hours beforehand. But so Watson's now your backup guy, right? So based on what you saw from him, and we all seem to be in agreement on the point of maximizing the roster. Do you feel comfortable rolling into September with him as the guy that's going to be commanding the offense? If God forbid, I'll repeat that, God forbid something were to happen to Kyren Drones, because that obviously would not be very good. And I don't care who the backup is. It's not going to be Kyren Drones, but you're still going to be going out and trying to win football games. Do you feel comfortable in Watson compared to your theoretical replacement level transfer portal backup that you could bring in as the guy to do it?
I'm not particularly confident that Brent Pry is going to find a better quarterback than Pop Watson in the transfer portal. I'm sure that there are some guys that have more experience, maybe have more of a proven passing track record, but those guys are looking for starting jobs. They're not looking for backup jobs.
Yep.
So whenever you're trying to find a backup quarterback in the transfer portal, you're kind of limited, because most of these guys are transferring because they think they're going to start. And sorry, boys, Kyren Drones is going to be QB1 no matter who the hell comes out of the portal. So finding someone that also fits the offense better than Pop Watson, I think it's going to be extremely difficult. Now, with that said,
great point.
I was not particularly impressed with Pop in this game. I think that his height is a serious concern, and I know that shorter quarterbacks have had more success over the last 5 to 7 years than they ever have before. But guys, I don't know that if you've seen him in person play, but he is tiny. This is not a tall guy. And like throwing over offensive linemen is a legitimate concern, right, at that height. And he had a pass batted away for an interception in the spring game that wasn't a situation where the defensive lineman really had to jump all that high.
But how big are his hands?
Most worrying is that the offense is really going to have to change if Pop Watson is your starter. And that's not to say that he doesn't have the talent and skill set to be able to make plays, but I do think that there is kind of a hard ceiling on what his upside is going to be.
I agree with I agree with pretty much everything you said. The one thing I think that would change pretty significantly, at least to the three of us, and I think to, you know, the Virginia Tech fans that are really into like nerding out about like offensive schemes and stuff like that, I think the one thing that we would see that would change a lot if Pop Watson had to take over as QB1 would be, man, if you think they roll the pocket now, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, they're ready going to watch every play.
Get ready to learn rollouts, buddy. They are going to roll the pocket every single time there's a passing down because of Pop Watson's height. And we said this off the top. Because the quarterbacks aren't live in spring game and because they're not running and, you know, from everything we've heard, from everything we understand, and Kyren Drone said himself after spring game, you know, he said, look, like, I think Pop's going to be pretty good. I don't think a spring game is a spot where you can really see Pop Watson's skill set shine. And Kyren said basically,
he's electric when he's running with the football.
And Kyren Drone's kind of said, like, look, like, I kind of felt the way I'm sure he feels, like, when I was in his shoes last year and I was battling for a starting quarterback job. I didn't feel like, you know, Kyren Drone said, I didn't feel like I could really show what I could do in spring game just because we're not live. Like, I can't run. I can't show my athleticism. I can't show the way I'm throwing outside the pocket because we're not rolling the pocket a bunch in spring game. Like, would there be a drop-off, you know, from Kyren Drone to Pop Watson, you know, if Drone's, God forbid, I'll add a third one on there, Andrew. If he got hurt in September, would there be a drop-off? Of course. Like, Pop Watson's a freshman. Like, of course. But, like, does he have the skill set for the offense? And, Ricky, I think your point was just right on the money with the transfer portal. And, like, guys are looking for an opportunity to start. Not only that, but, like, the fit in the offense. Like, I think Pop Watson is a great fit for Tyler Bowen's scheme. I think he's a great fit for everything.
I don't know if he's got the ability to be that physical runner that Kyren is. But he
that would look different.
Make plays on the ground for sure.
Yeah, that would look a little different. Maybe like with Kyren Drones, we've seen a lot of like the in between the tackle stuff. So, yeah. You know, I think that would be the other element, right? I think you'd see more rollouts in the passing game, like pretty much every time you threw the ball. And then I think the other element that I think is really significant, Ricky, that you just mentioned, is the running between the tackles element. I think with Pop Watson, it's more like spread option concepts rather than battering ram. Like QB power, which we saw with Kyren Drones a lot last year with a ton of success. And that really helped the offensive line too.
It's a lot easier when your quarterback's 245 pounds and all of 6'4", 6'5", however tall he is.
Yeah, when he's helping the interior offensive line push as well because he's just like running them through their defensive linemen. That really helps too. Helps your run block grade. So I think you roll with Pop Watson. Obviously, Pop Watson won the backup quarterback job. If he didn't, Whitkey wouldn't have transferred. So Brent Pry, I think, had that conversation with Whitkey, is probably safe to say. I'm as comfortable as I can be about a backup quarterback situation going into the year, I guess. Like, I mean, would you like your backup to have a little bit more experience? Yes. Are you going to find a better one right now for the scheme? Obviously, maybe you find one that's good with the scheme, but are you going to find a guy that is going to understand the offense as well as Pop Watson by the fall.
And understand his role, that he's not a starter.
Like, you are not starting over Kyren Drones. So, like, are you willing to accept that? If the answer is yes, I think the next question for Brent Pry is, do we think this quarterback is a starting quarterback for us in 2025 that we're bringing in?
Yeah.
If the answer is maybe, then yeah, I think you pull the trigger and make that move. If the answer is no, then I'm not sure you make that move only because if Pop Watson's the future at the position, you don't want to scare him off too, right?
Yeah, the other thing to think about too is that Pop Watson and Davey Belfort are not all that dissimilar. So it looks like Tyler Bowen and Brent Pry are going in that direction of your more athletic, maybe smaller but faster mobile quarterbacks, and that maybe that's what they want to get to at some point, is that that's kind of their pie in the sky mold that they're interested in. So, and Mike, you bring up a good point as well. I mean, if you think Pop Watson has a chance to be your starter next year and you're betting on him to take over, should Kyren Drones no longer be on the team for any right. particular reason, you don't want to piss him off, right? Because in this era, player retention is extremely important. And if a player feels like he's being kind of eschewed out of the organization, then his ability to jump ship and find a different situation somewhere else is as more accessible now as it's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that sentiment for a variety of reasons. You know, you guys covered all the main points, so I won't drag it home. But though I don't know what Virginia Tech's ceiling looks like with Pop Watson at starting quarterback, God forbid. Kyren Drones gets hurt.
Can that just be the name of this podcast? Like,
sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm open to suggestions. You know me. I'll solicit suggestions on the title anytime, and fine with me.
But yeah, I mean, Jason Brown 2.0 can't be that much better, right? Because that's who you're gonna get. You're gonna get Jason Brown 2.0.
Yep.
And
you're gonna get someone that's FCS or Division II or something like that.
So I'll take the upside, right?
Yeah,
I'll take the upside. I'll take planning towards the future. I'll take a guy who has at least at this point a year studying Tyler Bowen's offense, familiarity with the players on the roster. I think within the realistic realm of possibilities, that's, you know, Pop Watson is about as good as you're going to get, right? And I think that if Pop Watson were in the transfer portal, a lot of other comparable schools to Virginia Tech would be happy to take him in.
Yeah.
For that very same role that we're talking about, like replacing him for. Like,
right.
It's the reality of college football in 2024. Guys who have the potential to be a immediate impact starting quarterback right away probably transferred out of there and weren't slated to probably transferred out. You know, December 1st, right? Unless your name is Arch Manning, you're just chill banking $100 or $1 million and hanging out with the women and backing up Quinn Ewers, which I say more power to you, buddy.
Yeah, the point you just made, another really good one. Like, another team in Virginia Tech's position would be happy to bring in Pop Watson to fulfill literally the exact same role that you're bringing in a guy to replace him with in Blacksburg. Like, right, I mean, that's just right on the money, right? And the other point, too, is, like, we're going to have people screaming at, you know, this YouTube video or on audio being like, oh, Kyren Drones has eligibility next year. Yes, I know he does. Like, I know he has another year of eligibility. But if Virginia Tech reaches their goals this year, one of two things will happen, right? If Virginia, this is a good problem to have, by the way. This would be a great problem to have. Virginia Tech has an outstanding year, right? And he either puts himself in position to be drafted or he maximizes his value from the standpoint of, like, okay, now if I can go to a situation next year, and Virginia Tech fans would be up in arms about this, but I need to just put this out there. If I can go to a situation where I have an entire stable of running backs returning, I have a bunch of skill positions at wide receiver, maybe I get paid a little bit more in NIL. If he were to make that move in the transfer portal, let's say he wasn't all the way there from an NFL draft standpoint, feels like he can go to another offense with more established veteran playmakers around him, be kind of like that missing piece. That this is kind of like a Hendon Hooker situation where he goes into like quarterback friendly offense at Tennessee. Sam Hartman, like, leaving Wake Forest and going to Notre Dame feels like, well, I mean, we'll see in a week and a half, but Hartman said he feels like he improved his NFL draft prospects. He wasn't that highly rated because of his height and arm strength, stuff like that, but he feels like he bettered himself by going to Notre Dame. Could I see that happening with Kyren Drones? Yes, like, I could, just given Virginia Tech's roster next year. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, right? I think either way, like, if Virginia Tech has a good year, I'm not sure Kyren Drones is going to be on the roster in 25, so I'm just preparing fans for that reality, and it goes back to our one-year window thing with this core of players.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speak for Kyron. Maybe he says, you know, I want to come back and play in Blacksburg. That would be fine, too.
Well, the,
so, yeah, if anyone wants Mike's address to, like, throw a brick through his window or something like that, just DM me.
Yeah.
This, I mean,
yeah, it, just avoid my kid's window.
Avoid his kid's window. And the puppy. And his wife. Yeah. But Mike,
yes,
free target.
All those things.
First, and I also hope that gets the kind of vitriol that we got. I like to think about when we got the most vitriol. And the one I pinpoint is when Ricky said, what makes you think this Demetrius Davis kid's actually going to come play at Virginia Tech? And people got so mad.
Oh, man.
So mad.
God. How's he doing, by the way? Everybody know?
He was at Alabama State. I think he just transferred to Texas State.
Must have been for the academics. sorry. I had to. It's really important.
That was a layup.
Yeah, it was. It's really important for us to be realistic about the era that we're living in. And Mike brings up a great point. There's going to be highly attractive situations for Kyron Drones after this coming season. For those who may not know, there were highly attractive situations this offseason for Kyron Drones that, you know, for the love of God forbid,
those things don't
pan out. So Virginia Tech is fortunate to be able to retain its starter from the previous year. They're fortunate to be able to retain the production from last year that surrounds him. That's not going to be the case in 25, which is why this year is so important. It not only does it build you that credibility and kind of give you a long leash with the fan base, if you have a lackluster year in 2025, but think bigger picture here, folks. What's going on in college athletics that doesn't involve the transfer portal? Realignment. I don't know if folks have been following all the news that's going on. The ACC is being sued by approximately 42 schools. The two biggest schools in the conference don't want to be in this conference. They've made that abundantly clear. The ACC is on, you know, death's doorstep, right? The old Grim Reaper meme of Kim coming for conferences. The ACC's next. So Virginia Tech needs to put itself in the best possible position to be the most attractive partner to any conference and, unfortunately, to any television network should Virginia Tech want to remain at this level. And I think that's why Virginia Tech is investing so much on the football side. And
sorry, why, basketball.
Yeah, and you know, this is a sad reality. I don't like that this is how it is, but this is how it is. And that's why going out there this year and putting together a really good season is so important, because it does put that lasting memory in the minds of the powers that be that, you know, this place is kind of a sleeping giant, hopefully. I still believe that it can be. And Kyron Drones, Brent Pry, all the other guys on this team have a chance to make it so this year.
Yeah, one thing you can always say about this podcast, right? Despite our allegiance, we try our best to live in reality, and we don't want to shield our listeners from unpleasant truths.
Yeah.
And
tough conversations.
Tough conversations,
man. Embrace the tough conversations. That's what Brent Pry says. So yeah. We know, do that here.
We try to.
Yeah.
You know, to take that 10,000-foot view, Ricky's first name, in reality, 10,000-foot view, LeBlue, my favorite. though not everything is what you always want to hear about, you know, quarterback might go play for LSU next year and whatever. Like, and not that there's any, like,
Ryan Kelly, baby.
But
yeah.
Did you guys catch the lead to my column today?
What was it like?
Oh, I didn't. I want to I'm going to read it on the air.
I got a message from a certain somebody who is needling me about that.
Oh. Pulling it, quote. This is from Richard LeBlue, Esquire. Pulling anything meaningful out of Virginia Tech's annual spring game is as difficult as retaining a highly successful women's basketball coach. Too soon, question mark? And into the column he goes.
Just dive in head first.
Hey, yep. If you weren't ready to read, you're ready to read now.
Yep, that's right.
It's like a shot in the arm.
Yeah. So sometimes you got to slap your reader in the face to wake up.
Spicy, you know? It's really hard.
Click on my spicy link here.
Yes, right, exactly. 18 and over. All right. It's really hard to jump into a specific spring game premise because we're always like talking big picture on this podcast. We tried to talk about specifics and we went into big picture because that's what we do. I want to talk one quick thing. Running backs.
PJ Prelo.
What's up, man? What's going on?
I'm not sure if he's still a walk-on, but the kid did not play like a walk-on on Saturday.
There are scholarships available now.
Over under 150 rushing yards this season for PJ.
Under, I think.
Probably under, but I'm not sure that it should be. I mean, look, man, he was juking out like starting players on Virginia Tech's defense.
Second like, coming of Daniel play. Dyer.
I mean, look, all I'm saying is the kid, I think, may deserve a chance. He's got a little bit of quick twitchness that I don't see from all of Virginia Tech's running backs, and I'm not going to throw any names out there.
You guys remember Daniel Dyer? Walk-on running back Daniel Dyer? Does that name ring a bell? Vaguely. My wife's cousin is married to Daniel Dyer's older sister. So there you go. Oh, it's kind of like...
Look at you, Mike.
Just it's kind of like...
Secondhand royalty.
Secondhand royalty to a former Virginia Tech walk-on. At point being, like, Daniel Dyer showed some shiftiness when he was in the game and like mop-up duty for like 4 years. I doubt he's listening to this podcast, but shout out Daniel Dyer. Maybe that's what PJ Prelo is going to be. And I don't want to like poo-poo his performance against like starting caliber players because I thought he did play well. He's buried on the depth chart. Now, could I see him potentially taking over like a rotational piece in the return game or something like that? Yes. Like, could he be the second punt returner, especially if Tucker Holloway's injury is as serious as it could be? Like, could he be the second return man behind Jalen Lane? Sure. Could he be a kick returner? Like, if you don't want to run Bashel Tootin out there like Virginia Tech liked to do last year, you know, could he make an impact in the kick return game? Maybe. Like,
same
I think
Jeremiah Coney, by the way, I was impressed with the way he ran the ball too.
I think Coney has a chance
than Prelo, but
well, I think Coney has a legitimate chance. Like, you look at like Malachi Thomas's injury history. You know, he's struggled to stay healthy, stay on the field, and when he has been, at least the last couple of years, he's been a little bit banged up. I do think there's an opportunity there for Jeremiah Coney. And Ricky, I know you wrote about this. I'm in 1000% agreement with you. I think there's an opportunity for Jeremiah Coney to potentially push for some playing time. I know Bashel Tootin is going to get a lion's share of the carries.
As he should.
But, you know, I think that RB2 competition
should be wide open as far as I'm concerned. Look, let's be honest. We haven't really seen a lot from Malachi Thomas since his freshman year or 20, sophomore year?
20 or 21, whatever it was.
Yeah. When he had that incredible three-game stretch, essentially, where he just ran like, you know, like he was Jerome Bettis or something. I mean, it was incredibly impressive, that stretch. But he's been dealing with injuries ever since then and has not been the same player. And if you've got guys behind him that are churning it up, then those guys deserve a shot. And I mean, I'm a firm believer that Bashel Tootin needs to play like 65-70% at least of the running back snaps. But that extra 30%, I don't think that anyone has really locked that in. And I would be interested to see Coney and even Prelo maybe get some opportunities in some of these instances to see if they can earn a shot.
Defense, any thoughts? Like, I think, look, CJ McCray got hurt. It didn't look good.
Yeah.
He was on crutches. There's rumors, reports, message board fodder that he likely broke something. Not great, right? Not great. Virginia Tech's defensive ends, though, the non-APR type guys, like,
I think the one that stood out the most.
Looked good. Looked good.
Mean, not just looked good, he absolutely owned whoever he was across from, it looked like. And again, we have to, the sack numbers are kind of discounted, but him and James Jeanette kind of lit up the box score. But Keyshawn Burgos, for me, looked like he was consistently getting into the backfield and consistently forcing the quarterback to have to get off the spot, which is very, very encouraging considering that APR is one guy. And unfortunately, he is going to get most of the attention from the opposing offensive line. So Virginia Tech would really, really benefit from having someone who can at least draw some of that attention away on the other end.
I'd like to see Jeanette have a role. Interviewed him last year with 247, a kid who I thought had a lot of potential coming in. Obviously, FCS to ACC is a bit of a transition, but
kind of thin.
Yeah, very thin.
Wish I was thin. Anywho, go ahead.
Like, wish you were starting defensive end.
Pushing for snaps. Wish I was starting defensive end.
But either way, I like to hope that, what we saw from him is more than just a flash in the pan, something that's going to translate to Saturdays. And, when it comes to pass rush, just like any other position on this team, you want to feel like Virginia Tech is, I guess with the exception of Kyron Drones, right? This team isn't one injury away from disaster.
Yeah.
And what we saw from the pass rush on Saturday at the spring game is a glimmer of hope that the depth might just be there. And, I've said it once on this podcast already, and I'll keep hammering it home. Being able to articulate that right now is night and day from how we felt about this team. Certainly sure. 2 years ago,
yep.
Even still last year. This roster has come a long, long way.
Sure has.
Linebacking core, it's really hard. I mean, Brumfield looked good. It's really hard to...
I thought they looked okay. I didn't really focus on them a ton.
It's also hard, you're splitting the defense up and stuff like that. You're using, different rotations with the maroon and orange teams. Like, it's hard to really see Brumfield have full command. He looked good running sideline to sideline.
Yeah, and it's also hard too to not see them defend running quarterbacks. I mean, that's such a huge part of playing linebacker. You've got to be able to get contained on those guys. So for me, it's just kind of I didn't really have an opinion one way or the other on them.
And on top of that, right? Like, if Brumfield's role is going to be to command, essentially be the quarterback of the defense, you wouldn't expect for a guy who showed up in January to have a full grasp on that at this point. So
that's a good point.
We can't give him, I don't think he did anything to deserve like a ridiculous amount of kudos, but he didn't play extremely poorly either. Like, we know he's a good athlete. If you watch his tape in the Middle Tennessee games against, I believe it was like Alabama, if I remember correctly, played well against good competition. He's an athlete. It's a question of, how quickly can we make that transition into, really being at that defensive signal caller and having a grasp on it. And you know, as we saw with a lot of Virginia Tech's linebacking struggles last year, it was guys being out of position, guys who just didn't know what they were doing at times. And as we saw last year, like, you basically got to be damn near perfect at that, right? Like, one big screw up turns into a 50-yard run to the house for what's his freaking name on Rutgers, and suddenly the game is broken.
Oh, right? Monaguy. Yeah.
Monaguy. Oh, we'll see him again, won't we? But yeah, so too early to make a judgment call. So I guess that just gives us another question mark that we can prognosticate all summer long.
Yeah, I guess it's good. You know, it's a good sign that Brent Pry has been encouraged by how quickly Brumfield's picked up the playbook. Like, that's when the coach is like outwardly talking about that in press conferences and stuff like that in the spring, that's generally a pretty good sign. Said he's come in and he's immersed himself well with it, with, you know, his teammates and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, he's, you know, you're hearing.
Never said that about Stone Snyder, huh?
The only Mike linebacker that was supposed to be on the roster last year. Yep. That's,
would
that's
still love to know what happened to that NIL money. I wonder if he ever got it.
Poof.
Yeah.
Poof.
Donors went and used the code BeamerBall20 on Vivid Seats. The money went to us.
Yeah, that's right. That's that's why I'm considering retirement. That's right.
Oh, man. That's great.
Yeah, we're just going to do this whole time now.
It might be an extremely rough retirement.
Yeah, I was going to say, going to have to be on food stamps.
Yeah, just so folks know, Mike is working two jobs. Like,
yeah.
As fun as this podcast is, I don't think we're replacing that income anytime soon, Mike.
Yeah, not yet anyway, but you know. I got to feed the him.
Yeah.
Him.
There you go.
Got to feed him. Safeties. I mean,
okay. I mean, again,
okay.
Back to my original point, I didn't feel like the secondary put themselves in really very many bad spots.
Yeah.
The corners I felt like were pretty solid. I mean, I wrote Jalen Jones hard last year and talked a lot about how he was really a problem on the defensive end. And I still stand by all that stuff from last year. He looked okay in the spring game, which is, you know, encouraging. And we have to hope that with the second year, a second off season of playing safety, that he's going to be able to feel a bit more comfortable in this role and comfortable in what he's doing. So we can't hold last year entirely against him, but he certainly has to prove, I think, that he's worthy of a starting spot there.
Yeah, like, can he make, you know, we call it like the freshman to sophomore leap. And yes, I know Jalen Jones is a senior, I think, now at this point.
Yeah, at this
or
point.
At redshirt junior, but whatever he is, he's been here a while and he made a position change. It's not like going from running back to wide receiver, like a slot wide out. He went literally from offense to playing defense, which he did play some defense in high school, but playing safety in the P, I can't call it P5 anymore. Playing safety in the P4 versus playing, you know, safety in high school, little bit different.
A little bit.
So can he make like that quote unquote like freshman to sophomore leap with the new position? Like, that's kind of what you're hoping for. And I do think, you know, Mose Phillips, I think he'll play some. I think he'll be in the rotation, especially.
That was what I was going to say. I think they're still going to have a pretty sizable rotation back there until they really feel comfortable with somebody.
And the same goes for him. You know, he played a lot of snaps as a true freshman. This is an actual freshman to sophomore leap. And I do think that him, you know, earning his stripes a little bit and making some mistakes as a freshman, making some good plays as a freshman, I think all of that ends up being experience that you carry forward, and hopefully he can step in as a sophomore in a really important year for the program and play really well. Hopefully Jalen Jones can play well. Hopefully the safety position in its entirety, not to say it was like the number one problem last year, so it's going to be pretty disingenuous. They were put in a lot of really, really bad spots because the interior defensive line didn't play particularly great. We know the linebacker situation was a mess. I just hope that, you know, the questions that we have at safety, you know, we can kind of answer a lot of those internally so that we don't need to literally address like every smaller item on the roster with a transfer portal ad. Like, you'd prefer to be able to answer some of these questions internally, but don't have that as kind of like your only avenue, because then you end up like Dabo Swinney is at Clemson, and you just run the same guys out there and don't get better in the portal, and you run in a circle and you bang your head against the wall at 8 or 9 wins. You're like, why are we not a championship program anymore? Well, you're cutting yourself off at the kneecaps for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, again, you could hope for improvement. I mean, there's countless examples of college players improving over time. It's just literally what happens.
Yeah.
Caleb Farley was literally trash and a liability and turned himself into a first-round draft pick in like a year.
Yeah.
But unless the other, you know, 14 whatever data points from spring practice are telling a story entirely different, I imagine there's some GAs in Merriman right now watching some random transfer safety film.
That's fair. Before we, I guess this could be the last one, we can close this podcast out. Was there anything that you guys took away from the spring game in totality that makes you feel, it's going to sound like I'm doing a shtick, better or worse, or the same, about the trajectory of the program heading into the fall? I feel, I'll just kind of start by saying, I feel pretty much exactly the same. I was high on the team going into the spring game. Nothing I saw makes me like real concerned that this team is not going to be what I think they're going to be, at least on paper going into the year. I don't know how you guys feel. We try not to take, again, we said all night, try not to take too much away from spring game, but
yeah, I mean, I was a bit concerned about the passing stuff that we talked about off the top, but overall, this doesn't really change the scope or the paradigm or the narrative surrounding this team. I think this team is very much in the same spot that they were before spring practice. And, you know, I would hope that they would take Andrew Alex Radio's advice and, you know, hit the transfer portal one or two times to try and plug just a couple more holes, add a little bit more depth. You can never have enough pass rush. You can never feel too good about any one position. So we'll have to see how it goes. But for me, no change.
I mean, like, I was never going to have my opinion be too impacted by this one way or the other. The only time I really went in searching for an opinion was 2022, and I left that spring game thinking, this team's going to probably be pretty trash. Right. But, you know, I mean, more so than anything, just, you know, good vibes, encouragement all around. I mean, it's great to see Drones take home offensive MVP, like, surprise, starting quarterback won it.
Yeah.
Peebles winning on the defensive side.
That's
Aiden Green, most improved.
Good sign.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know, it's a conversation that we can have this summer, but it's like, Steven Gosnell's health or whatever is like that even that much of an impact? Is he going to be supplanted, you know, rotationally on two different types of receivers, if you will? So maybe and, not. But
let's again, make sure we give Andrew his flowers for the Aiden Green hype, who this
last year,
aware, Andrew was the first one on the Aiden Green train last year.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Fickell's got an eye for talent.
Didn't we each nailed that, didn't we? Ricky, I think you said Mose Phillips. He played significant snaps. I think I said Caleb Woodson, and he ended up playing significant snaps. And then Andrew really nailed it with Aiden Green. I think we each...
Subscribe to the pod, folks.
Subscribe to the podcast, baby.
What are you doing if you're not listening to Hokie Hangover?
Subscribe to Hokie Hangover. Let's go.
Meanwhile, got, Ricky picked us to win like 9 games in 2022. And I was right.
Whoops.
I said five and seven. I think all three of us said 5-7 last year. We've mentioned this a couple times too. Like, happy to be wrong. That was not the path we saw to get to a bowl game. Did not see that coming.
The military bullshit was a joke. Then we actually had to follow through.
Yeah, we actually had to go to the damn game.
We actually had to like buy tickets and sit in a monsoon.
Yeah.
Couldn't have had worse weather.
Some of us had to, actually had to had drink to get quite inebriated.
Yeah, 15 to 20 shots of bourbon.
I was hammered. But I had a good time.
I'm not sure anybody was as hammered as the producer of the basketball conference podcast.
Yeah, he'll second that in a text thread that we have. He'll second that. I just want to say one thing before we wrap up. This team's good.
Good. I'm not sure they're great, but I do think they're good.
This team's good, which after the last few years, we'll take.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun summer when we're sitting here talking about win losses.
Oh, the hype's going to be out of control. I mean, the hype's going to be out of control.
The hopium,
which is good,
in high demand.
We like that. Yeah. I mean, we like that.
It's good for business.
Yes.
It's good for business.
Buy your pitchers. Get the ice machine going. We're going to be drinking Kool-Aid all summer, folks. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen to us on audio. Rick.
I got one item.
Rick, yes.
Virginia Tech retiring Liz Kitley's jersey. Well done.
Thank you.
That was needed. I'm glad. I thought it was really cool they announced it at the spring game. Shout out to the university and the athletic department for not fumbling that one.
That's like, this almost qualifies into like, I'm not going to congratulate you for doing your job kind of deal.
Fair enough.
Shut up on time. Good job, Ricky.
I'm not going to thank the fan base for all their support the last few years and get the fans all up in arms. Do you want to do that? Do you want to talk about that tonight? Do you want to talk about that tonight?
I'm just kidding. No. We have a summer of crap to fill.
I'm just kidding.
Our fan base, though. Thanks.
Too soon?
Hangover listeners. Yeah, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Rate, review, subscribe. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, especially, but subscribe everywhere where you listen to your podcast. Give us a rating and review. We have a lot of longtime listeners. Even if you don't plan on watching a lot of these podcasts on YouTube, if you can just go hit subscribe for us, you don't even necessarily need to watch, but just go hit subscribe. If you're an audio only podcast consumer, totally fine with us. Totally fine.
Look popular on YouTube, please.
Helps. Yeah, it really helps. Every bit helps. It takes like 30 seconds. youtube.com/@HokieHangoverPodcast. Very simple. The link will be on social media as well when we promote the pod. But yeah, go do that. It really helps us out. Guys, anything else?
I don't think so. Orioles are off to a hot start. So baseball season could be fun again.
Don't want to talk about that series.
Morgan Wallen might be going to jail, but his lookalike, Gunnar Henderson, looks pretty good there, Rick. Come on now.
Orioles are over here cloning pasty-faced white boys, and they're all turning into absolute monsters at the plate.
Shout out Cedric Mullins, though. Oh. Not a pasty-faced white boy.
Seti.
Also.
Seti the Entertainer.
Yes. For the people that were, preying on the demise of my New York Mets starting the season 0-5. 10-8 now, baby. Yeah, the collapse doesn't come till August. Come on now.
Yeah, well, the collapse for the Red Sox came in the offseason. We'll be back next week.
Objectively hilarious because the Red Sox are like one game under 500 and Mike Slick ready to
This team sucks. We already have relievers that are hurt. Devers is banged up. Story's out for the year. This team sucks.
And on that note,
we'll be back next week. Go Hokies.